Turn your Bibles, please, to the 64th Psalm, Psalm 64. We'll be reading that entire Psalm. You'll find that in your Scofield Bible on page 628. Psalm 64, all 10 verses, reading the verses responsively. And the fifth verse is the text verse. Well, let's stand, please. All of us standing for the reading of this passage of Scripture. Hear my voice, O God, in my prayer. Preserve my life from fear of the enemy. Hide me from the secret counsel of the wicked, from the insurrection of the workers of iniquity, who whet their tongue like a sword and bend their bows to shoot their arrows, even bitter words, that they may shoot in secret at the perfect. Suddenly do they shoot at him and fear not. They encourage themselves in an evil matter. They commune of laying snares privily. They say, "Who shall see them?" They search out iniquities. They accomplish a diligent search. Both the inward thought of every one of them and the heart is deep. But God shall shoot at them with an arrow. Suddenly shall they be wounded. So they shall make their own tongue to fall upon themselves. All that see them shall flee away, and all men shall fear and shall declare the work of God. For they shall wisely consider of his doing. The righteous shall be glad in the Lord, and shall trust in him, and all the upright in heart shall glory. Let's pray.
I'm going to speak tonight on the subject. That's enough. I'm going to speak tonight on the subject of the enemies of David encourage themselves. The enemies of David encourage themselves. This morning I spoke on David encouraged himself. And tonight, the enemies of David encouraged themselves. I read, you need not turn to it again, but I read for you. They encourage themselves in an evil matter. They commune of laying snares, privily or privately. They say, "Who shall see them?" Our Heavenly Father, I pray now, as we come to the teaching and the preaching of Thy Word, that should help us to do it in the energy of the one who authored it. Now I pray you'd give me the hearts and minds of all the people that we may see the truth thou hast for us tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. It was the saddest day in David's life. Of all the life of David, never did the sun refuse to shine for so long a period. Never were the clouds so thick. Never was darkness so dark. Never was sadness so sad. And never was loneliness so lonely as it was when David faced the insurrection, the rebellion of his own son. Now, I'll be honest with you. This is more than I can really comprehend. I was in another state not far from here recently. And I was told of a pastor who had pastored a church for many years. His own son was his assistant pastor. And his own son caused rebellion against his father and led the church to vote to fire the old man from the church so the young man could take over the church. Now, I can comprehend most anything better than I can comprehend that. I cannot understand that kind. But David faced it. His own son, Absalom, had decided that he should become the king. He rallied forces from David's army and David's people around himself and had a rebellion, an insurrection, a revolution. And there was warfare between the armies of David and the armies of his son, Absalom. Of course, the son used such logic as the devil always leads revolutionaries to use in a case like this. He said, "Dad's getting old, and the load is heavy on Dad. And so I want to take the load off of his shoulders." And, of course, such spiritual cliches as, "God is leading me, and I have prayed about it. I get so sick of folks blaming God for the devilment. And the Lord led me to go with an unsaved boy. The Lord led me to marry an unsaved girl. Oh, the Lord led me not to give my tithes to the house of God on the Lord's day. Or the Lord led me to go into sin and so forth. But Absalom hid behind those cliches, and he rebelled, and a war followed, a revolution followed. Now, David won the battle, if you can win when your own son is killed in that battle. David won the battle, if you can win, when your heart is broken because you've lost the best friends you ever had. David won the battle, if you can win a battle, when the people that you served and with whom you served and whom you loved for many years have rebelled against you. But Absalom did exactly that. In this sadness, there was also another form. David had a friend whose name was Ahithophel. Ahithophel was David's lifetime friend, his faithful counselor. He was his close buddy from childhood. No doubt they had played together around Bethlehem as children. They had known each other as they went to the synagogue, and as they went to school, and as they played boy-like games around the city. They were friends of a lifetime. Recently, I was preaching one night in Greenville, South Carolina, there for Dr. Walt Hanford, and one of his assistant pastors, his young man named Steve Keyes, a very fine young man. Steve's father and I were close friends from childhood, from the age of 9 until a couple 3 years ago, his father died, and he and I were the closest of friends. In fact, when he died. Shortly before he died, I was preaching in Dallas, went out to the Veterans Hospital to see him. And I said, Bob, I've got to go now. And I knew it was the last time. I think Bob knew too. But I knew that Bob was going to go to heaven soon. And I said, Bob, I'm going to do something I've never done before. He said, what's that, Jack? And I said, I'm going to kiss you. I leaned down and kissed him on the forehead. And Bob went, ick. And that was the last word he said to me, ick. And, but he and I, friends from childhood, we threw paper routes on adjacent streets. I threw the route down Idaho. Maryland was right next to Idaho in our town, Maryland Street. He threw the paper route down Maryland. He lived two blocks from me. We were in the same Sunday school class. We were cohorts and throwing Pee Wee Howard out the window every Sunday morning. And we, in other spiritual endeavors, we joined together. But God wanted us to throw Pee Wee Howard out the window because we prayed about it. And we felt led to do it. And anyway, for Bob Keyes to disown me would have been a very, very heartbreaking thing. For Bob Keyes to have been a part of a revolution against me would have broken my heart. He and I were friends for many years before he went to heaven. The guy that married Bob was named Clyde Box. I'm sorry, he married Bob's widow to another preacher after Bob died. And so at the wedding, they were having the receiving line. There was a pastor. And so somebody came by and said, Brother Box, don't you know, now that Sybil's married to Sylvester Matthews, a good man, by the way, now don't you know that Brother Bob up in heaven is so pleased about this? And Clyde Box said, I bet he's fighting all over heaven. I hate to face him when I get there, he said. If my son Dave had joined together with Bob Keyes and rebelled against me and had a revolution against me, that would have doubled the sadness. But that isn't all. There's another person that joined this revolution. His name was Mephibosheth. You know the story. Mephibosheth was a crippled fella. When he was 4 years old, he was a cripple. He was being taken care of by a nurse, and the battle came to his town. The nurse grabbed him and ran, and in grabbing him, he fell, and he was lame the rest of his life, crippled the rest of his life. When David decided to do something for Saul, after Saul had died, he asked if anybody knew any in the house of Saul for whom he could do a kindness for Saul's sake. And Ziba, the servant of David, stepped up and said, yes, there is one. Down in the land of Lodibar, there is a young lad who is crippled. He is Saul's grandson. His name is Mephibosheth. And he's the only survivor or living survivor of the family of Saul that I know of. And David sent down to Lodibar, to the house of Amiel in Lodibar. And David had his servants bring Mephibosheth. Now get this. Bring Mephibosheth to the palace. David adopted Mephibosheth as one of his own sons. Are you listening, young people? David adopted Mephibosheth as one of his own sons and put him at his palace and made him as a prince in the kingdom. This little cripple fella who lived down across the tracks, I call him the first bus kid. He was escorted to the palace, and there he lived as one of King David's sons. Now, one of the sad things about this, did you know when time came for this revolution, when David's own son revolted against his dad, and Ahithophel, his friend of a lifetime, joined that revolution, did you know Mephibosheth also turned on David? That's more than I can comprehend. Here is him. Of all the things that David had done for Mephibosheth. You see, our problem is, what have you done for me lately? You can do something for me all of my life and then cross me one time and I won't speak to you anymore. I know members of churches, not in this church, I'm sure. I'm a member that stay in the church 10, 15, 20 years. And the pastor gives himself for the people. And he'll do one thing. He'll make one decision. It may even be a mistake. Make one decision. And from that one decision, they'll have that count or outweigh all the good that he's done for them all through the years. It's what have you done for me lately? And so Mephibosheth joined in this rebellion. Now get this, ladies and gentlemen. Here is David, brokenhearted. Why? His own son has rebelled against him. Why? His own best friend or his friend of a lifetime, Ahithophel, his counselor, his advisor in the kingdom, his secretary of state, you might say, or his chief advisor. He has forsaken him. And now then Mephibosheth, this little fellow for whom David, or whom David had given so much, he turns on David. But that isn't all. One of the trusted officers in David's army also turned. His name was Shimei. When David was fleeing the city of Jerusalem because he did not want to fight with Absalom, he left the city. His forces fought Absalom's forces and finally were victorious. But Shimei followed David down the road of shame, down the road of sadness. And in the darkest day, and by the way, David had known some dark days. It was a dark day in David's life when he stood at the grave of that little child that was a fruit of his sin with Bathsheba and Uriah. And it was a dark day for David when he saw or realized his own son had raped his own daughter. I mean, David's son had raped his sister or David's daughter. It was a dark day for David. Can you imagine that? It was a dark day for David when David's son got mad at this son who raped his sister. And David's other son said, "I'll kill him!" And he threw a big party in honor of his brother. And in hiding behind that party was a plot to kill him. And David's son killed another son. Get that! David's own son died as an infant. David's own son raped his sister. David's own son killed his brother. David had known some dark days, but no day in David's life was as dark as this day. And by the way, no single event of David's life became the object of as many psalms as this one single event. It broke his heart. His son betrayed him. His best friend of a lifetime betrayed him. His trusted Mephibosheth, whom he'd helped so much, betrayed him. His trusted army officer, Shimei, ran down beside David, picked up dust and threw dust at David, and picked up rocks and threw rocks at David, and cursed David as he was going. Yeah, he said, "You killed Joab." Yeah, he said, "You're guilty of killing Joab." Yeah, he said, "You killed Abner." Yeah, he said, "You're guilty." And David going down in that dark day with his own officer throwing stones and sand at him and cursing him with his own son. Guilty of anarchy, rebellion, with his own best friend of a lifetime joining in that. And little Mephibosheth, whom had helped so much, becoming a part of that. David spent the darkest day of his life. Now then, how did they get to this? Are you listening? How did they get to this? How could David's son rebel against his dad? How could David's best friend rebel against his friend? How could David's trusted Mephibosheth rebel against the one who had taken him from poverty and raised him to being adopted son of the king. One who had eaten in poverty and worn rags. Now he's wearing royal garments and eating at the royal table of the king of Israel. Now how can he do it? The Bible says. It says that they encourage themselves. We read it a while ago. You need not turn to it. It says that they encourage themselves. In fact, here's what it says. They encourage themselves in an evil matter. They commune of laying snares privately. They say, who shall see them? Now, this entire 64th Psalm was written by David during this tragic time when his son Absalom, his friend Ahithophel, his benefactor Mephibosheth, and his officer Shimei had joined with others to rebel against David. He wrote this psalm during that awful time. And he said, they encourage themselves. What does that mean? That means that when something like this takes place 99 times out of 100, sin is brought forth because one person encourages another person to commit it. And that's why you shouldn't run with the wrong crowd. You should not run with people who would encourage you to do evil. You should not run with people who would ask you to take a drink. You should not run with date a boy who would ask you to do evil with him. You should not date a girl who would try to seduce you to evil. You should not be in the company regularly of people who would try to get you to smoke marijuana. You should not be in the company of people who would try to get you to use dirty language. I'm saying these people got together, and Mephibosheth encouraged Absalom, and Absalom encouraged Ahithophel, and Ahithophel encouraged Shimei, and Shimei encouraged Mephibosheth, and Mephibosheth encouraged Ahithophel, and all of these encouraged each other. Listen, there is no loyalty, listen to me, no loyalty in this world so great as that loyalty of cohorts in sin together. Hear me again. There is no loyalty in this world as great as that loyalty between those in sin together. You try to get some kid that's been smoking pot to tell where he got it. You try to get some kid in school who's been out peddling dope to try to tell the names of the people whom he sold it. You see with the house what causes that loyalty. S-A-T-A-N. You're not faking on somebody when you tell authorities they're smoking marijuana. You're saving them from possible wreck and ruin. It seems that there is some kind of merit in helping somebody ruin himself. And they even take pride in this so-called loyalty. Why, they even say, boy, I'm his friend, and I'll not tell on my friend. Let him smoke himself to death. Let him ruin his life. Let him destroy his health. Let him ruin his children. Let him get some girl pregnant. Let some girl get pregnant before she's married. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't be a fink. Now that you're an idiot, you're an idiot. I'm not talking about tattling on somebody because he shoots a spit wad in math class. I don't think you ought to shoot spit wads in math class. I have in days gone by contributed to that misdemeanor myself. But I'm not advocating it. I thank God when I did shoot spit wads in class, they took care of me very, very well. And they'd haul off and spank the fire out of me. And my mama never called up there and said, my son don't have to obey. And you're a fool if you do. But you say they mistreated my son. There's not a school teacher in this room who's treated your son as much as you have. But I'm saying this. I'm saying, you watch out. Here, first, watch out for the wrong crowd. Wrong crowd calls Peter to curse and swear and deny the Lord. The wrong crowd calls Lot, the wife, to turn to a pillar of salt, and Lot to get his own daughters pregnant with the sin of incest, and raised up two heathen nations that have hounded God's people for lo these many centuries. Wrong crowd caused Abraham to have his affair with Hagar And of that she from that she conceived and brought forth Israel. And the entire Middle East crisis tonight is because Abraham ran in the wrong crowd. There wouldn't be any Arabs tonight if Abraham had not run in the wrong crowd. Now, if Abraham can't run the wrong crowd and get by with it, and if Jehoshaphat can't run in the wrong crowd and get by with it, and if Moses couldn't run the wrong crowd and get by with it, and if Isaac couldn't run the wrong crowd and get by with it, and if Lot couldn't run the wrong crowd and get by with it, and if Naomi couldn't run the wrong crowd and get by with it, bless God, you're not going to run the wrong crowd and get by with it. And I'm not talking just about taverns and nightclubs and discos. Now hear me. And by the way, you won't buy me off from this. And all the notes you write me will do nothing but aggravate the intensity of my preaching on this next Sunday night. You won't write me off, you won't buy me off, and you won't scare me. I'm saying, not only should God's people not go to wicked heathen places, but God's people should not regularly frequent any place that is operated and attended largely by unconverted people. I'm talking about Little League. I'm talking about Boy Scout. I'm talking about Girl Scout. I'm talking about carpool with unsaved people. I'm talking about bowling leagues with unsaved people. I'm talking about college of unsaved people. I'm talking about government-supported schools operated by unsaved people. I'm talking about skating rinks run by unsaved people. I'm talking about health spas attended by unsaved people. I'm talking about any other regular place of your frequenting it. You'd better realize that you're not going to hang around the wrong crowd and turn out right. Now, listen. You put a man that doesn't drink with a man that drinks long enough, you'll have two men that drink. You put a man that curses with a man that doesn't curse, and you put them together long enough on a regular basis, you'll have two men that curse. You put a man that's honest, the man that's a cheat, long enough, you have two cheats. Folks, you don't catch good health. I've said it so often. If one person has mononucleosis, you don't get somebody that's well to kiss him so the guy that has mono will get well. No, one mono plus no mono equal two mono. That's a good mathematics formula. Now, you don't get a guy that's got a bad cold to have somebody that hasn't got a bad cold that sneeze on him, sneeze on each other, so the guy will get well of his cold. No, sir. Listen to me. There never has been, since the Garden of Eden, anybody who's ever gone in the deep sand but what first didn't get with deep sinners. Now, let's go a bit farther than that. These fellows encouraged themselves. Hithophel said, come on, Absalom. Your dad's getting old. And Absalom said to Mephibosheth, look, Mephibosheth, join up on my group. I love my dad. I'm trying to help him. Take the load off his shoulders. And Shimei said, come on, fellas, go. And they encouraged each other. And this woe be heavy hangs over the head of people who encourage each other to sin. Heavy hangs over the head of you teenagers who give a cigarette to another teenager. I said, heavy hangs over your head. Heavy hangs over the head of that little punk that'll give marijuana to somebody else. Heavy hangs over the head of that young man. And I use man very loosely here. Who entices some young lady to sell for less than 30 pieces of silver her chastity, her virginity, and her purity. I say heavy hangs over those of you who encourage people to sin. Heavy hangs over the crowd of public school teachers that teach our boys and girls that man came from monkey. Heavy hangs over the heads of those who advertise filth and promote filth. The truth is, we ought to encourage folks to righteousness and not unrighteousness. Now, what caused? Listen, Absalom by himself would never rebel against his dad.
Ahithophel by himself would never have rebelled against his friend. Mephibosheth by himself would never have rebelled against the one who had given him so much. Shimei by himself would never have rebelled against his commanding officer. But they got together and they encouraged each other. And in so doing it, they rebelled against David, father, friend, supporter, commanding officer. They encouraged themselves against David. Beloved, do not mingle with the skeptic. Do not associate with the idler. Do not run with a pleasure seeker. I think it's been about 8 years ago. Maybe less. A Hammond Baptist High School young lady met some of these other... And by the way, I want to say this. Not only should you not run with the wrong crowd, but you should not run with the wrong people who are in the right crowd. I've said this before. They're students at Howells Anderson College. You Howells Anderson students shouldn't run with. They're students in Hammond Baptist High School that you good kids shouldn't run with. They're students in Hammond Baptist Grade School you shouldn't run with. There are weeds in every flower garden, germs in every hospital, error in every classroom, tares in every church, a Judas in the 12 apostles, and a Dan in the 12 tribes of Israel. And there are people in your Christian school. There are people tonight in this room who come to church regularly that you should not associate with socially. Young lady, several years ago, Hammond Baptist High School, I called her name, you'd know her. She tried to do right. In fact, I met with her several times. She was living in sin. I met with her. She grew to like me and had confidence in me. We got to know each other. She became a buddy. She lived right. But two or three or four young ladies, females, at Hammond Baptist High School kept picking away. These people that walk just inside the room. These people that get 124 demerits every semester, but not enough to get expelled. I want to stop and say this. I want every teacher and every administrator in our schools to enforce the rules that the deacon board has set, and I want it enforced without exception. And if you're not enforcing it, you're betraying the deacon board that hired you and leads in paying your salary. You have no right to bypass the rules set up with the board of our school. None. If I don't agree with them, then find your school where you do. But they're students in all of our school. We can't get the goods on them. They're sly. They're sneaky. They're tricky. They're smart. You know who they are. You know who they are. You know who the straight crowd is. And the opposite of the straight is crooked. You know who they are. One of these crooked little hussies got this good girl I was trying to help. Said, come on, go with us. She did. Come on. They encouraged her to sin. Like Absalom, Ahithophel, Shimei, Mephibosheth. They got together. Come on. And then cursed her to sin. And she did. Hold it. She got pregnant. I got a letter from her this week. Dear Brother Heil, first I want to say what you preached and preach is right. And you hear me, every ear in this house, hear me. You will someday believe what I preach is right. You may believe it now and heed it, or you with a broken heart Someday, we'll believe it. Young man sat in my reading room. Young man went to our high school. Then got on dope because he was encouraged by other young men to do so. And those young men that wouldn't tell on him are a party to the fact that tonight he's a vegetable. He sat in my office not long ago trembling like this. He said, Brother Hiles, I can't quit. I'd give anything in the world if I could quit. I can't quit. He said, Preacher, he said, I never smoke pot or put a needle in my arm without seeing your face. He said, I never go to a bar and drink liquor without seeing your face. Hey, young people, trot out your dope crowd and show me some happy ones. Trot out, you marijuana suckers, and show me some happy ones. Let's have a few testimonies. Tell us what a blessing the devil is to you. Tell us how good Satan is. Tell us how much fun it is vomiting up everything in your stomach on Monday morning. Tell us how much fun it is when the high is over. Tell us how much fun it is when you wake up and you're beating somebody half to death. Tell us, tell us, tell us, tell us. Stand up and tell us. You can't tell us because the wages of sin is death. And the soul that sinneth shall surely die. And sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. She said, Dear Brother Hiles, I know what you preach is true. And then she said what they always say. She said, keep preaching it. She said, if young folks don't believe it, keep preaching it. And then she said, Brother Hiles, have you seen my boy? Are you listening to me? Have you seen my boy? Her eyes have never focused on his face. Her hands have never cradled that boy in her arms. He has never regained nurture as a baby from her breast. She has never put his little socks on him or changed the diaper. When he started to school, she wasn't there with him to sign the papers. She said to me, sitting in my office one night, young folks, she said, it may happen to others, but it won't happen to me, but it did happen to her. And it will happen to you. She said, could you check up and just find out what color his eyes are? She said, would you tell me how tall he is? Would you just tell me his first name? She said, could you tell me, is he in good health? Could you tell me, has he been saved yet? I live in a distant state, she said, but I'd like to know how my boy is doing. That little boy that she carried next to her own breast for 9 months, that little boy for whose life she went in the jaws of death, I'll sing it, I'll holler it, I'll preach it, I'll stomp it, I'll scream it. As long as God gives me breath, the wages of sin is death. Oh, how sad when people encourage each other to sin. That little lady who sits tonight in a distant state, wondering what color eyes her son has, wondering how tall he is, wondering how big he is, wondering what kind of complexion he has, wondering he's a good boy, she sits there tonight. Why? Because at Hammond Baptist High School, some punk encouraged her to evil. And I'm talking about people that said to her, come on, don't be one of the straight crowd. I've got more respect for a pimp than I have you people. You say, Brother Hiles, I just don't particularly like your preaching. I don't particularly care. You won't buy me off for 1 second. You won't do it. I'm not for sale. And that little old gal that wiggles up to you and says, hello, big boy, are you part of the straight crowd? Say, yeah, and I thank God I am. That isn't all that caused these people to rebel. They also encourage themselves. I don't mean just each other. But back to my sermon this morning. They encourage themselves. Each man encouraged himself to do evil. Absalom no doubt said to himself, Absalom, Dad's old. And someday I'm going to take over anyway. And I'm more trained than he is. Go ahead, Absalom, said Absalom. Take over the kingdom. He encouraged himself. And like I said this morning, every Christian ought to encourage himself like David did. You ought to say to yourself, do right. As I said this morning, I've numbers of times in my life, I've recorded on tape my own voice encouraging myself what to do. And listen to that tape. Get you a tape with your own voice, young people, and on it just say, do right, 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 and play it. Encourage yourself to do right. Young ladies, stay young lady. I used to get in front of the mirror when I was a kid and practice saying no. Mama made me. I'd say no, 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 no. No, 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 no,
no,
no,
no,
no. Practice it. You say, that's negative Christianity. Yeah, I know it. And you better get it. You better get it. Encourage yourself to do right. Encourage yourself not to do wrong. These fellows encourage each other. And then each encouraged himself. No doubt Ahithophel said, Absalom's going to win. After all, I love these people. And I still love him. I love David, but I think David's getting old and senile. Go ahead, Ahithophel, said Ahithophel. There's nothing wrong with this. And listen, you talk yourself wrong enough that there's nothing wrong with wrong, and you'll get to where you believe there's nothing wrong with wrong. A while ago, I said to you men in the office, I said, men, this country's going to be destroyed one day, or at least severely handicapped by looting on the streets from the people that the government cannot continue to support at their present rate of support. Did you hear what they said down in Memphis, Tennessee, and Atlanta, Georgia, when they were demonstrating on the anniversary of the death of Martin Luther King Jr.? They said, if we don't get jobs, we will turn out on the streets. And you know when that happens, your house will not be safe. And you'll have to have your house privately guarded when you leave it by an armed guard. Why? Because these people actually have been taught the government's supposed to take care of them. They believe it. They're not being mean. They believe it like you and I believe this book. They believe. You and I have taught them. And they're sincere in it. And by the way, you can talk yourself into believing anything's right if you just encourage yourself to do wrong. And these men, Mephibosheth no doubt said, look, Mephibosheth, you're a cripple fella. And David's going to lose. I know David has done a lot for you, but after all, Absalom is his son. And it's the only hope I've got. And Mephibosheth, you've got to go with Absalom. He encouraged himself. And he said, Mephibosheth, God doesn't expect you to stand. He was talking to himself. He was counseling with himself. And don't you ever be guilty of advising yourself to do wrong. You advise yourself to do right. No doubt Chimei said, now's your chance, Chimei. Go ahead and do it. I'm talking tonight to some young people who've been tempted. And you said to yourself, there's nothing wrong with that. And the truth is, listen, there's not a sane person. Are you listening? There is not a sane person in this room tonight but what doesn't know it's wrong to play rock music. There are not two crowds tonight, those that think it's wrong, those think it's right. There's one crowd. We all think it's wrong. You know it's wrong. Everybody in this house knows it's wrong. Every high school teenager knows it's wrong. Every public school student knows it's wrong. You know what's wrong with it. But you have encouraged yourself You've encouraged yourself and rationalized. You know what's wrong. You laid it. There's not a lady in this house tonight that doesn't know what's wrong with soap operas. There's not two groups of folks, some who think they're okay, some who think they're not. Everybody here knows they're wrong. You know what I'm talking about. But you sit there in your house, and there's that box staring you in the face, and you haven't got enough to do to keep you busy. Why don't you go out to the rest homes and visit some people in the afternoon? Why don't you decide to visit the hospitals in the afternoon? Why don't you decide to go buy some poor kid a little pair of shoes in the afternoon? But there you sit, unoccupied. Oh, you've done nothing all day but watch. You had to push three buttons. But you know it's wrong. And I'll tell you why you do it. You encourage yourself to do it. The non-tither encourages himself. He says, you can catch up later. It's an Old Testament teaching after all. I get a little tired of that. Since when did the Old Testament cease being a part of the Bible? And after all, charity begins at home. And you can't afford it now. Or you could say to yourself, you could encourage yourself to do right. You could say to yourself, the tithe is the Lord, and I don't want to be a thief. And you can say, do it, do it, do it, do it, do it. Encourage yourself. Encourage yourself concerning marrying an unsaved person. Encourage yourself concerning not listening to rock music. Encourage yourself concerning going to church. Encourage yourself against dirty magazines. You see, folks, as I said this morning, the day's going to come when you folks in Hammond Baptist schools, you won't have all these rules. Notice that poetry? You folks in Hammond Baptist schools, you won't have all these rules. Just flows off me all the time. I'm just one walking Edgar Allan Poe. But the day's going to come. Now, you better start encouraging yourself. Day's going to come and you won't have Miles Anderson College Chapel. You better start encouraging yourself to go soul winning. You better start encouraging yourself to build bus routes. You better start encouraging yourself to light the fire because you won't be able to warm at somebody else's fire that they've already lighted. Already lit. Shut up. Nobody tells me what to preach, especially some old grandma. Now the question is, whether or not you encourage yourself to do right or wrong determines often the difference whether you get a job or not. If I were looking for a job tonight, I'd encourage myself. I'd say, boy, you're just the kind they're looking for. Man, as hard as you work, they don't know what they're missing. And I'll guarantee you, we have some young men in Hiles Anderson College get jobs in a week after they lose one. We have other young men who come and say, I've been looking for 6 months. Now, what's the difference? Man, when I used to look for jobs, I'd get off work on myself. I'd say, man, you are some worker. And boy, they haven't got anybody to work like you could. And I said, boy, those folks got to have you or they're going to go broke. It's their only hope. Then I'd bounce in there and say, boy, I'd like to have a job. You heard me tell it again and again and again. I got on my knees at courthouse step when I was a college student. Nobody had jobs in those days. I mean, nobody. They just laid off four men at J.C. Penney Company. I walked down to J.C. Penney Company, my Bible opened to Jeremiah 33:3. I walked in there and said to Mr. Croft, the manager, I think I'm going to work here today. He said, who sent you? I said, Jeremiah 33:3. Look at it right here. Call on me and I'll answer thee and show thee great and mighty things thou knowest not. And I said, I got on my knees at the courthouse square. And I said, I'll guarantee you I'll be the best salesman you got. He said, you're hired. I just fired four men. But he said, if I didn't hire you, I'd always wonder whether or not you'd be the greatest salesman in the history of this company or the biggest flop in Harrison County, and he said, I've got to find out which one is true. Other guys were saying,
there's no job to blame him.
They are for the fellow to encourage himself. I preached like this other Sunday night, got a letter the next week. Fellow said, I've been looking for a job for months. He said, I practiced what you preached, and said the next week a guy hired me. Encourage yourself. Say to yourself, you can do it. Encourage yourself to write. Encourage yourself to victory. The difference oftentimes in winning a game is encouraging yourself or discouraging yourself. Doff Shays. I like him. Now he's an old man, probably 55. But he has a son now that plays professional basketball for the Utah Jazz. But Doff Shays used to play for the Syracuse Nationals. He was the first man in the history of the National Basketball Association ever scored 10,000 points. At the time he played, he was the highest scorer in the history of the National Basketball Association. Doff Shays, before every game, went alone. And he went through this ritual. He said, I make my living putting a round ball through a round hoop. The more I put that ball through that hoop, more money I make. If I don't put that ball through that hoop, I lose my job. Now he said there's a man out there who's going to guard me. His sole purpose in life for the next 2 hours is to keep me from putting that ball through that hoop. If he succeeds, that man will cause me to lose my job. I lose my job, my wife and kids will starve to death. That man's a murderer. Let me at him! Let me at him! Let me at him! He'd walk on the field and the guy'd put his hand out to shake his hand. He'd say, take your hand away, you dirty murderer. You don't know this, but I do that. When I preach anything about the devil, I get in the office alone in the afternoon, get mad as the you-know-who at the you-know-who. Yeah. If I preach on hell, I go out in the slum area. I drive around nightclub. I preach on heaven. I go out in Munster, those real pretty houses out there where all rich folks live. I don't mean everybody lives in Munster's rich. There's some poor white trash out there too, of which I'm one of. I'll guarantee you, if I preach on the devil, I get alone. Boy, by the time I walk through that door, I'm so mad at the devil. Encourage yourself. Encourage yourself. Encourage yourself. Encourage yourself to write. To success. Not giving up. To staying in church. To winning. To resisting sin. David marches out. He sees his son. David had 60 men who were Philistines, not even Jews. Are you listening? 60 men, Philistines, not even Jews. He had picked up while he was over in Philistia. And these men were his bodyguards. And David looked out of his palace many a time and saw those bodyguards
walking with their
weapon on their shoulder, walking guard around the palace protecting David. With their shoes glistening, with their sabers shining, with their uniforms neatly cleaned and pressed, walking, guard, protecting David, protecting his life, protecting the king. And then David's son rebelled, and his friend rebelled, and Mephibosheth rebelled, and his officer rebelled. And David walks down the stairs, he thinks, maybe for the last time, the royal palace. He sees those men with their sabers glistening and their shoes shining and their uniforms neatly pressed. He sees them as they march guard around the palace. And David says, men, I'm leaving the palace.
They take off their uniforms and put on their old clothes and take off their shining boots and put on their old shoes. Lay down their sabers and pick up maybe a bludgeon, a club. And David said, now, fellas, you go on back. I'm not king anymore. I'm not king anymore. You go on back. And Ittai, who was their captain, he made one of the most amazing statements in the Bible. He said, Your Honor, sir, whether it be by life or by death, wherever our king is, there will thy servants be also. And David, as he walks down toward the shameful trail to Mahanaim, without his throne, without his crown, without his scepter, without his royal robe, 60 men in old clothes and unshined shoes and Philistine garments with clubs instead of sabers walk guard around the man of God. They stayed with him. They stayed with him. One day David looks and sees the dust of battle settling in Jerusalem. Cushai, the servant, the messenger, comes out and says, the battle's over. And David said, how is my son? Is the young man safe? He finds that his son's been killed in battle, but then Cushai gives the news that the victory was won by David's forces. With a tear in his eye and rejoicing in his heart because of victory, and a tear in his eye because his son was dead, David goes back to the palace and puts the crown on his head and the robe on his back and the scepter in his hand. I can see him that first night with his heart broken. He goes to bed back in the palace. Before he goes to bed, he pulls up the shade, looks out to the front, and there he sees those 60 men, sabers back in their hands and scabbards and uniforms back on their bodies and boots back on their feet, because they stuck with David all the way through. You stick with Jesus all the way through. He's in Mahanaim tonight. He's not the God of this world tonight. The devil is. He's not the king tonight. Satan is the king of this world. His robe is unworn. His scepter is unused. His crown is laid aside. And the devil is the God of this world. Bless your heart. One day the king's going to come back. When the king comes back, he'll put his throne, put himself back on his throne, this scepter back in his hand, his robe back on his body, his crown back on his head. And when the battle's over, we shall wear a crown. Yes, we shall wear a crown. Yes, we shall wear a crown. When the battle's over, we shall wear a crown in the new Jerusalem. Oh, until that day when Jesus comes with trumpet sound, may we in Him and then be found, dressed in His righteousness alone, faultless to stand before the throne. Until that day, may we be busy encouraging ourselves to go forward, encouraging ourselves to do right,